Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Jeremiah chapter 35, which I will call the Obedience of the Rechabites. We start now in verses 1 through 5 of Jeremiah 35. The Lord spoke his word to Jeremiah during the reign of Jehoiakim. Jehoiakim ruled from 609 to 598 B.C. Jehoiakim, son of King Josiah of Judah. Josiah ruled from 640 to 609. He, that's the Lord, said to Jeremiah, "Go to the family of Rechab and talk to them. Take them into one of the side rooms in the Lord's temple and offer them a drink of wine." I took Jazaniah, who was the son of Jeremiah and the grandson of Abazaniah, and I took Jazaniah's brothers and all his sons, the whole family of Rechab. I brought them into the Lord's temple, into the side room of the sons of Hanan. He, Hanan, was Igdaliah's son, the man of God. It was next to the room of the officials and above the side room of Maaseiah, Shallum's son, the doorkeeper. Then I set cups and pitchers filled with wine in front of the family of Rechab. I said to them, "Drink some wine." Now, verse 1 gives us a time indicator as to when this prophecy was received from Yahweh. It was during the reign of Jehoiakim. Well, we know that Jehoiakim ruled from 609 to 598. He was the king, the son of Josiah, who was killed in 609 by Pharaoh Necho II of Egypt. And Pharaoh Necho II of Egypt put Jehoiakim on the throne. And it was during this reign, 609 to 598, that Jeremiah prophesied. Now, what part of that reign is not certain. It's probably after Nebuchadnezzar had invaded the land. He invaded in 605 after the Battle of Carchemish. And Nebuchadnezzar invaded Israel 605 with Carchemish, after Carchemish. Nebuchadnezzar invaded the land of Israel after he beat Egypt and the remnants of the Assyrian army at Carchemish on the Euphrates River in 605 B.C. And that was the year he took Ezekiel off into captivity. We know that this incident with the Rechabites must have happened after this 605 invasion, because in verse 11 we read this in chapter 35. "However, when Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, marched into the land, we," that's the Rechabites, "said, 'Come, let's go into Jerusalem to get away from the Chaldean and Aramean armies.'" Chaldean is Babylonian, and the Arameans are the Syrians who fought for the Babylonians. "So we have been living in Jerusalem." So we're going to assume this is sometime around 605 B.C. Benson says it's very probably that fourth year of Jehoiakim after the Battle of Carchemish in 605. Jehoiakim had been the vassal of Nebuchadnezzar for about 3 years, 3 years plus, and then Jehoiakim decided to rebel against him, and Nebuchadnezzar says, "I'm not going to put up with that." We read in 2 Kings 24, verses 1 through 2, "During Jehoiakim's reign," remember he's 609 to 598, "during Jehoiakim's reign, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, attacked. Jehoiakim became his vassal for 3 years," and I think that's three plus years, pieces of the fourth year, "and then he turned and rebelled against him." Jehoiakim did, rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar. "The Lord sent Chaldean, Aramean, Moabite, and Ammonite raiders against Jehoiakim. He sent them against Judah to destroy it, according to the word of the Lord he had spoken through his servants, the prophets." So that locates us in time, but we might notice that our last chapter was during the time of Zedekiah, who ruled from 597 to 586, which was later than Jehoiakim, so we're going back in time. Here's what two commentators say about that. First, Benson: "Here we have another evidence that the prophecies of this book are not placed in that order when they were delivered, for all the intermediate prophecies from chapter 26 belong clearly to the reign of Zedekiah, who ruled from 597 to 586. But Jehoiakim, this prophecy was given during the time of Jehoiakim, which was the previous reign." The previous reign, if you don't count the intermediate three-month reign of Jehoiachin. The Cambridge commentator says, "This and the following chapter form a remarkable break in the narrative of chapters 32 through 44. So we learn from this that the prophecies are not in chronological order as we go through the book of Jeremiah. Now, in verse 2, God tells Jeremiah to go to the family of Rechab. Who are they? Well, it is possible to trace them all the way back in time to about the mid-15th century B.C. to Moses' family, to his father-in-law Jethro. How do we do this? Well, I'll try to do it very quickly. Moses' father-in-law, whose name was Jethro, he was also known as Reuel. Jethro was called a priest of Midian and a Kenite. In Judges 1:16, he's called a Kenite. The descendants of the Kenite, Moses' father-in-law, had gone up with the men of Judah, dot, 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 dot. Numbers 10:29, Moses said to Hobab, son of Moses' father-in-law rule, also known as Jethro, the Midianite. So in Judges 1:16 and Numbers 10:29, we see that Moses' father-in-law is a Kenite and a Midianite. And the Midianite is where the people of Rechab settled as nomads. I shouldn't say they settled. They wandered as nomads. Where is Midian? Well, it's in Arabia Petraea. If you start at the southeastern corner of the Mediterranean Sea, at the desert of Shur, which is the boundary between Egypt and Israel, and you start moving east, you take in the southern area of Israel, the Negev, and go south of that, the wilderness of Sin, the wilderness of Paran, the old Edom. Keep going south of that, you end up at Mount Sinai. Keep going east, you cross under the Dead Sea, and go north a little bit, and you cross the Dead Sea itself, and you end up in present-day western Jordan. That's Arabia Petraea. Petra is in Arabia Petraea, the famous ancient Nabataean city that everybody likes to go see. That's where the Rechabites moved around. So, Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, also known as Reuel, was called a Kenite, and he was called a Midianite. Now, we use the term Kenites to link Moses' father-in-law to the Rechabites, because we read in 1 Chronicles 2:55 this, "The families of scribes who lived in Jabez, the Tirathites, the Shimeathites, and the Succothites, these are the Kenites who came from Hamath, the father of Rechab's family." In other words, Hamath had Kenites and Rechabites. Now, some people say that Kenites and Rechabites are basically a branch of one family. Maybe they're a different family, but they're related somehow. Wikipedia says they're actually the same as the Kenites are, as the Rechabites. Wikipedia says that's one theory, and then they punt and say, well, whoever they are, doesn't really matter. We know that the Kenites are Rechabites, are related to the Rechabites, and Moses' father-in-law was called Kenite, and that's how we tie the Rechabites to Jethro, also known as Reuel. That's just a little bit of interest that these Rechabites were so close to Moses even a long, long time ago, and if we trace their subsequent history, they wandered up with Moses to take the promised land, and we see them here in Jeremiah, acting very piously, so they were a godly people. They became proselytes to Israel. They always continued with Israel, though they remained a distinct people from Israel. Now, the founder of the Rechabites was a guy named Jonadab, also known as Jehonadab. Jehonadab allied himself with Jehu in the overthrow of the house of Ahab in the history of the northern kingdom of Israel. We read in 2 Kings 10:15, when he left there, that's Jehu left there. Jehu ruled in the northern kingdom from 841 to 814 BC. When Jehu left there, he found Jehonadab, son of Rechab, coming to greet him. He greeted him. Jehu greeted Jehonadab and asked, "Is your heart with one with?" Jehu greeted Jehonadab and asked, "Is your heart one with mine?" "It is," Jehonadab replied. Jehu said, "If it is, give me your hand." So he gave him his hand, and Jehu pulled him up into the chariot with him. So that's all we know of the Rechabites' ancestry. So in verse 2, God tells Jeremiah to take this family of Rechab. Now remember, we're a long time away from their ancestors now. We're back in the 500s now. Jehonadab was back in the 800s, the ancestor Jehonadab. So Jeremiah takes the family of Rechab and talks to them. Yahweh says, "Take them into one of the side rooms in the Lord's temple." Now, if you recall, the temple, when we discussed the construction of the temple back in the book of Kings, there were three stories of rooms all around the temple, on the sides and the back, lots of them. Here's what the pulpit commentary says about these side rooms. "There were many chambers of different sizes attached to the temple, and employed partly for stores, partly for councils and assemblies, partly for guard chambers and other official purposes. In Jeremiah 36:10, we even find a private person occupying one of the chambers. That into which Jeremiah conducted the Rechabites was, no doubt, one of the largest size. It was appropriated to the use of a single priestly family." I always thought those side rooms were the same size, but not according to the pulpit commentary. But at any rate, Jeremiah takes the family into one of these side rooms, which is apparently very large when you look at all the people he took in them, and then he offered them a drink of wine. Now, this is very strange. Why would Jeremiah do that? He must know that the Rechabites were under a vow of abstinence from wine. Well, here's some options. Jeremiah wanted to test the Rechabites. Or God wanted to test the Rechabites. Or both wanted to test the Rechabites. He wanted to see if they would uphold their ancient vow. And I'm sure he thought they would. He was using the Rechabites as an object lesson of obedience. And he wanted to make the Jews of Jerusalem ashamed because of their lack of obedience. So Jeremiah knew the Rechabites weren't going to drink that wine, but he wanted to test them and wanted to show everybody that the Rechabites were going to pass the test. I mean, you could say that Jeremiah was just being sociable. I don't think so. Poole suggests that Jeremiah wanted to reprove the priest who drank too much wine. I don't think that's true either. He just wanted to test the Rechabites. And I believe God wanted to test the Rechabites too. Now, this testing was done in a side room of the temple. How did foreigners, uncircumcised Rechabites, how did they get into the temple? Well, they were worshipers of the true God, as one of my commentators says. And so since they were the worshipers of Yahweh, even though they weren't really Jews, they let them into the temple. But I don't think foreigners were supposed to be in there, but they were. Another suggestion is that perhaps Jeremiah brought them there for a public rebuke of the priest. They had not been loyal like the Rechabites had been loyal to their father's commands. And so, what perfect place to show the contrast between the obedient Rechabites and the disobedient priest of Israel than in the priest's own temple. Now, several of the Rechabites' names were mentioned. Jazaniah, the son of Jeremiah, and grandson of Habazaniah. And Jazaniah's brothers and sons weren't mentioned, whoever they were. Now, these names, Jazaniah, Jeremiah, and Habazaniah, all show how pious the Rechabites were. Jeremiah means Yahweh exalts. Jazaniah means Yahweh hears, according to Ellicott. Habazaniah means Yahweh gathers, again, according to Ellicott. Yahweh exalts, Yahweh hears, and Yahweh gathers all walk into the side room. So those family names probably show that the Rechabites were sharers in the faith of Israel, perhaps as an order, conspicuous witnesses for that faith. That's Ellicott's speculation, that the Rechabites were more than just a family. They were a religious order. Another interesting speculation is drawn from the fact that Jazaniah was the son of Jeremiah. Of course, this is not Jeremiah the prophet. But some people speculated that the name Jeremiah may possibly indicate that there was some previous connection between the Rechabites and the prophet's family. In other words, maybe one of the Rechabites' mamas said, I'm going to name my son after Jeremiah the prophet because he's a godly man. Could be. At any rate, Jeremiah takes them into the side rooms. He takes Jazaniah's brothers and Jazaniah's sons into the side rooms. Now, this was only the men, of course, no daughters. Ellicott says this, the words may be taken in their literal sense, that they were literal brothers. But on the assumption that the Rechabites were a religious order rather than a family, the terms may indicate different stages or degrees of membership. The brethren being those who were fully incorporated, the sons those who, like the sons of the prophets, were still in training as probationers. Well, that's a nice speculation, but I don't believe that. I think they were just a family. At least that's my impression. Now, the side room belonged to the sons of Hanan. Hanan was Igdaliah's son. Hanan was Igdaliah's son, the man of God. Either Hanan or Igdaliah was a prophet, a man of God. Commentators split on that. It doesn't really make any difference. Some people think that this Hanan is the same as Hanani the seer in the times of Asa, who was reigning from 911 to 870. We read in 2 Chronicles 16:7. At that time, Hanani the seer came to King Asa of Judah. So maybe this prophet had maintained a room in the temple all the way down from the 900s to the 500s, kind of like a church pew. Now, Jeremiah continues telling us where this wine testing took place. It was next to the room of the officials. I'm sure that's referring to city officials. Maybe it's the officials ruling the temple. I don't know. Above the side room of the doorkeeper, Maaseiah. Why all this detail? I really don't know. I didn't see any commentator commentating on it, but it just seems strange to me that Jeremiah would give us an architectural tour of the temple. But he did. In verse 5, Jeremiah says, Then I set cups and pitchers filled with wine in front of the family of Rechab. I said to them, Drink some wine. Rechab, by the way, is spelled R-E-C-H-A-B, but sometimes it's spelled R-E-C-A-B, sometimes R-E-C-C-A-B. Take your choice. We go now to Jeremiah 35, 6 through 11. But they replied, "We do not drink wine, for Jonadab, son of our ancestor Rechab, commanded, 'You and your sons must never drink wine. You must not build a house or sow seed or plant a vineyard. Those things are not for you. Rather, you must live in tents your whole life, so you may live a long time on the soil where you stay as a temporary resident,'" an alien in other words. "We have obeyed the voice of Jonadab, son of our ancestor Rechab, in all he commanded us. So we haven't drunk wine our whole life, we, our wives, our sons, and our daughters. We also have not built houses to live in and do not have vineyard, field, or seed. But we have lived in tents and have obeyed and done as our ancestor Jonadab commanded us. However, when Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, marched into the land, we said, 'Come, let's go into Jerusalem to get away from the Chaldean and Aramean armies.' So we have been living in Jerusalem." Now, in verse 6, the Rechabites, Jazaniah and company, mention their ancestor Jonadab. That's probably the same Jonadab we've already mentioned, the one who rode with King Jehu. So by that, it appears that Jonadab was a man of note and figure, a man of renown. And of course, that was 300 years before this time. I've already read you the scripture in 2 Kings 10:15, where Jonadab allied himself with Jehu. Now, Jonadab had commanded two commands. The first command, all you Rechabites, don't drink wine. Why did he say that? John Gill says it's not easy to say why. Well, I've got seven options that I've culled from my commentaries, so let me give them to you. Option number one, they were not to drink wine to prevent quarrels and contentions, luxury and sensuality, drunkenness and worldly mindedness. That means they were very spiritual people. Option number two, they were told not to drink wine to inure them to hardships, because wine is the drink of partying and joy and banquets. But no, these were hard men of the deserts, nomads, not to be drinking wine. Option number three, they didn't drink wine because the wine was drunk by people in the land, and Jonadab wanted to remind his Rechabite descendants that they, the Rechabites, were but strangers in the land in which they lived. Let the natives drink wine. We're not going to drink wine. Option number four, Jonadab says don't drink wine so that the Rechabites would stay in the same life their ancestor Kenites had lived in, which was feeding cattle. This is Matthew Poole's idea. Cattle herders don't drink wine. They drink milk. That's what nomads do. Verse 5, they were not to drink wine to keep them as a separate people. Everybody else drinks wine, but not us weird Rechabites. We're different, so we're not going to drink wine. Option number 6, Jonadab told his Rechabite descendants not to drink wine because he wanted to emphasize that the Rechabites were nomads. As Barnes says, quote, "The vine requires time for its growth and care in its cultivation, while the preparation of the wine itself requires buildings, and it then has to be stored up before it is ready for use. The drink of nomads consists of the milk of their herds." In other words, a lot easier to drink milk as you pasture your herds in the desert. You just take some of their milk. But if you are growing grapes, it takes a lot of cultivation, and you've got to be settled to do it. I said I had seven reasons. I actually deleted one, so I've only got six. But now let's look at the ancestor Jonadab, the ancestor of the Rechabites. He also had another command, and that's don't build any houses. That's in verse 7. Don't build a house. Don't sow seed. Don't plant a vineyard, because you're not going to be drinking wine. But you're also not supposed to plant. You're supposed to be nomads. You're not supposed to build a house. These things are not for you. You must live in tents as aliens, temporary residents. Well, I've got seven options as to why Jonadab gave his descendants, the Rechabites, that command not to build houses. Option number one, they were strangers in the land of Israel, and so they were not to have any inheritance in it, and he respected that law and custom of the Israelites. Option number two, the pastoral life was what their ancestors had lived, and he wanted to keep his family traditions, wanted to do it just like his daddy and granddaddy had done it. I'm from the South, the American South, and I'll tell you, I understand that. We don't like to change things quickly down here. It's a part of the culture. So perhaps that's why Jonadab was saying, don't settle down, build a house, because we've always been shepherds. We always will be. Option number three, if they lived as nomads, they would not be envied by the Israelites. It would be clear to the Israelites that the Rechabites were not coveting any of the lands of the Israelites, and so the Israelites would be friendly with them. Option number four, they were not to build houses because upon famine or pestilence, they could more easily remove to other places. Just pick up your tent and go. Option number five, the reason Jonadab told his Rechabite descendants not to build houses is because that would keep the Rechabites free from the contamination of cities. Of course, cities are always known for their sin and vice. That hasn't changed. Option number six, Jonadab told the Rechabites not to build so that the Rechabites would be free from the temptations of acquired property. Option number seven, Jonadab told the Rechabites not to build buildings because then the Rechabites would less likely be subject to attack because they would not accumulate wealth in one place where it could be stolen. And so from verse 8, 9, and 10, the Rechabites, probably through the mouth of Jazaniah, their spokesman, basically said, that's what we've done for all these years. Ever since the time of Jonadab in the 10th century B.C., we're now in the 6th century B.C., and we haven't drunk wine, we haven't planted vineyards, we live in tents, we haven't built houses, we have obeyed our ancestors. But then Jazaniah tells Jeremiah, this is why we're here, in Jerusalem, where they're not supposed to be. Their nomads are in the grasslands. They're not in cities, but they're in cities now, so why? Well, verse 11, Jazaniah says, or at least one of the Rechabites says, however, when Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, marched into the land, we said, come, let's go into Jerusalem to get away from the Chaldean and Aramean armies. In other words, they fled from outside the city into the city where they thought they might get protection from the Babylonian armies and the Syrian armies who were fighting with the Babylonians, the Aramean and Syrian armies. So we've been living in Jerusalem. How do we know that the Syrians fought with the Babylonians? In 2 Kings 24:2, we read this. The Lord sent Chaldean, Aramean, Moabite, and Ammonite raiders against Jehoiakim. And since the Babylonians were the big dog in the area, we can assume that these Chaldeans, Arameans, as well as the Moabites and Ammonites, were all fighting for Nebuchadnezzar II. We go now to Jeremiah 35, verses 12 through 17. Then the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah. This is what the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, says. Go, say to the men of Judah and the residents of Jerusalem, will you not accept discipline by listening to my words? This is the Lord's declaration. The words of Jonadab, son of Rechab, have been carried out. He commanded his sons not to drink wine, and they have not drunk to this very day, because they have obeyed their ancestors' command. But I have spoken to you time and time again, and you have not obeyed me. So from these verses, we see the purpose of Jeremiah inviting all the sons of Rechab to the side room. We see the doorkeeper's side room in the temple to offer them wine, to see them refuse the wine so he could have an object lesson to show the people of Judah, of Jerusalem, that there are some people who keep the commands of their ancestors, unlike the Jews who did not do that. In fact, God has spoken to the Jews time and time again, and yet they have not obeyed. Verse 15, time and time again, I have sent you all my servants, the prophets. For over 300 years, the Rechabites didn't drink wine. Contrasted to you, time and time again over all this time, I've sent you prophets proclaiming, turn each one from his evil way of life and correct your actions. Stop following other gods to serve them. Live in the land that I gave you. And the implication there is, if you don't quit following the idols, you won't live in the land anymore, which is exactly what happened in 586 B.C., but you would not pay attention or obey me. Now, think how much better the Rechabites were than the idolatrous Jerusalemites. The Rechabites didn't get any promise of reward if they obeyed their ancestors, but the Israelites, the people of Judah, they were given the promise of a promised land, a land they could live in if they obeyed. But the Rechabites still obeyed better. The Israelites got a land of milk and honey if they obeyed. And the Rechabites were asked to do something that was not immoral in itself. Nothing wrong with drinking wine. So they abstained from something that was a pleasure, whereas the Israelites were told to abstain from something that would kill them, idolatry. So the Rechabites orders were much more difficult to carry out. If somebody told me today that I had to not steal or commit adultery, well, that's easy to carry out. But if they told me I had to quit watching NBA basketball, well, now that's something else. That's a hard command to obey. The Rechabites obeyed anyway. And not only did they obey, not once did they disobey. Contrast the Israelites. They were constantly disobeying. And not only did they obey, they were obeying the voice of a mere man. The Israelites were told to obey the God who created the universe. You would think it would be easier to obey Yahweh, the creator God, compared to obeying a mere man named Jonadab. Verse 16, Jeremiah 35. Yes, the sons of Jonadab, son of Rechab, carried out their ancestors' command he gave them. And as I just said, they carried it out perfectly. I assume it was perfect. We don't know of any times that they drank wine or built houses. So the sons of Rechab carried out their ancestors' command he gave them, but these people have not obeyed me. This is Yahweh talking about the Israelites. They haven't obeyed him. Therefore, this is what the Lord, the God of hosts, the God of Israel, says. I will certainly bring to Judah and to all the residents of Jerusalem all the disaster I have pronounced against them, because I have spoken to them, but they have not obeyed, and I have called to them, but they would not answer. Now, what was it that God had pronounced against the people of Jerusalem? Well, all the prophecies that we've been reading about here in chapters 1 through 34. Up till now. No, they didn't listen. And so the Babylonians came and burnt their city to the ground. We go down to Jeremiah 35, verses 18 through 19, and we will finish this chapter. Jeremiah said to the house of the Rechabites, "This is what the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, says. Because you have obeyed the command of your ancestor Jonadab, and have kept all his commands, and have done all that he commanded you, this is what the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, says. Jonadab, son of Rechab, will never fail to have a man to always stand before me." Well, first of all, how long is that? Never fail. Well, it could be a long time. It could be as long as the people of the Jews were a people, until 586, when the Babylonians came. It could be as long as the world should stand. Jonadab, the son of Rechab, will never fail to the end of the world without end. Well, that can't be, because there are no Rechabites today. So it's either a long time or until the Jews disappear. They will never fail to have a man to stand before God. The NIV for stand has serve. They will never fail to have a man to serve God. So the posterity of the Rechabites will continue. Some even say that the prophecy is literally fulfilled in Christians because they're standing before God, but I don't know how in the world that could be. That's somewhat of a stretch. Maybe you could say Christians are obedient like the Rechabites were obedient. I think that's somewhat of a stretch. I don't believe that. Well, how will the Rechabites have someone always standing or serving God? Well, it could be by offering worship in their families. They didn't have a temple, of course. They were moving about. And of course, if you say it's Christians, then that's true. Christians will always be around to stand before God to serve him. But I don't think that's what it means. Next question to ask is, why such a great reward for not drinking wine or building houses for several centuries? This is my speculation. I guess it's because God wanted to honor their obedience. And he's trying to show the people of Jerusalem, this is what happens when you obey your ancestors. Contrasted to you, what's going to happen to you when you disobey the words of Moses, your ancestors, or Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob for that matter. And when you disobey the prophets like Jeremiah, bad things are going to happen. Good things happen to those who obey. Ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished Jeremiah 35, and we are prepared to go in our next audio to Jeremiah 36, which I will call Jehoiakim Burns Jeremiah's Scroll. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.